Coming up on Smart Tech Today, Matthew Casinelli and I talk about how we're going to have to wait even longer for smart blinds. That's right, they're super expensive, and the ones that are a little bit less pricey are going to have to wait. One day, we finally have blinds that open and close with our voice. But until then, tune in.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean offers the simplest, most developer-friendly cloud platform that scales as you grow. Get started today for free with a free $50 credit at do.co/twit. Welcome to Smart Tech Today, where we explain the exciting, dynamic, and, well, sometimes confusing subject that is the Internet of Things. I, of course, am Micah Sargent.
And I am Matthew Casinelli.
And today, we're bringing you all the news that's fit to print in this podcast in electronic format, which could be a lot of news, but today it is not.
Yes, we have got a slightly like light week, but I think that's post Cyber Monday and Black Friday. All the companies are like chilling a little bit, but
they're calming down. I heard there's something called Green Monday now. What color's next? Is there Platinum Wednesday? Technicolor Tuesday. Yeah.
Thirsty Thursday? Get all your smart mugs.
Yes, smart mugs. Well, and so that's one of the things I think, we sort of, where Thanksgiving is the holiday of course, giving thanks, but also enjoying a nice banquet feast. We have loaded up with the news, and now it's time to, take it a little light before we have another round of loading ourselves up. And apparently that is the rule that all of the different smart companies out there are following as well. But I think we should dig in. We had talked a little bit in the past, and this is a topic that I've talked about on iOS Today and in other places as well. But one of the things that Apple has done as they have grown and are looking at new ways to fund their business in a world where everyone who owns an iPhone, who wants an iPhone, has an iPhone. I think there were maybe too many statements there, but in that world, they have to find new ways of making money. And the way they make money is by becoming a services company. And so we're seeing more and more the company kind of open up their services to third parties in a way that has not taken place before. And in this case, it is AirPlay 2 and also HomeKit support, which are coming to some of the smart TVs. And there's already the Apple TV app on some smart TVs. They've been rolling that out. But Sony gets the magic touch, the blessing of Tim, I don't have anything.
I'm always waiting to see where you go with this.
Yeah. I just wasn't fast enough for that one. There's something there. The Cook credentials. There we go.
There it is. Nice.
Ding. And we we got there in the end. So Sony, their smart TVs are going to be featuring this. And let's talk a little bit about both. So tell me about AirPlay 2.
Well, the first thing that I learned is that, of course, it doesn't work on my TV because it's just the generation before this.
Oh, so you have a Sony TV.
I do. I do have alternate methods of controlling it using smart technology, but I guess you can take one guess at which app I use for that.
Could it be an app called
Tasker for Android? No, it's Siri Shortcuts.
Yeah, but, Shortcuts. Yeah.
But HomeKit and AirPlay 2 on your smart TVs basically makes them both destinations for you to send audio and also be able to just like turn on and off using Siri or like with the HomeKit tiles. You can hook them into all of your automations too, which is cool. So you can like set TV time and have the lights turn down and your TV turn on and stuff like that. I wish I had it because I want to demo it more and see like the full extent of what you can do.
Do you not have an Apple TV?
I do.
And is your TV, what year is your television?
2017. So these are 2018, 2019 models.
Well, even if you don't have...
So it is fairly recent.
Yeah, even if you don't have AirPlay 2 and you don't have HomeKit, if you have a more recent version of HDMI CEC, for example, my television, I could... even from here, I believe, could open up my phone. I don't want to do that because I don't want to turn on the television right now, but it definitely in my home, I could set up a thing that turns the Apple TV on because it is connected through Wi-Fi. And by turning on the Apple TV, all the rest of the devices that I have connected to it turn on because of HDMI CEC. So even without HomeKit support or AirPlay 2 support, HDMI CEC sort of does the trick of getting them all turned on. And if you use your Apple TV and not these smart apps on your television itself, then you can go as far as saying, not only do I want you to open AirPlay or not only do I want you to turn on the Apple TV, which turns on all the rest of my devices, but I also want you to launch this app, which is very cool and sort of circumvents this. But I upgraded from an older TV that had HDMI CEC, but had an earlier version where it did not have all of the functionality. It had the ability to turn on and off the television, but it didn't have what I now have, which is if I have the remote app open on my phone, I can use the volume controls on my phone to turn up and down the volume. And that was the sort of way for me to tell, okay, I've got a new enough version of HDMI CEC running on this television that it will actually give me that those other features and functionality. So
yeah, I love that. That's like my favorite. I feel like a lot of people don't actually know that. So like to reiterate, when you're using the remote app, you can use like the hardware buttons on your iPhone and it will send that signal to your TV and your like an audio receiver or something like that. Does it, did you say it's your TV speakers itself or is it a soundbar or anything like that?
So I have a soundbar plugged in through the HDMI ARC port. And so that way, and for folks who don't know, HDMI ARC is this clever thing that they had to come up with because a lot of folks now have televisions that are also smart televisions. And so when they are smart, you can essentially you can use the television to sort of play whatever it is that you want to play on it. But then how do you add a soundbar to that and get it to actually output? You'd have to use an audio port or something like that instead of HDMI. And so the way that you did it before was you took your devices like a set-top box, an Xbox or something like that, and you routed it through the soundbar and had the television be part of the experience as well. And then you were able to sort of play through the soundbar. But HDMI ARC essentially lets the device communicate in both ways so that even if you're just listening to something on your television and you still want that audio to be sent out to the soundbar, then it can do so. And if you want it to play what's on your Apple TV or what have you, you can do that. So yeah, soundbar plugged in through the HDMI ARC connector. The Apple TV is running into a Hue Sync box, which is then connected to the television. And I just hit that one button on my horrible Siri remote and everything turns on and the lights.
Did we talk about how I actually like that? I like the remote.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think maybe not on camera because you knew I was going to freak out about it. So what you like pain?
No, I think the biggest thing was I bought, it's a little thing from Studio Neat. It's like a little, it's just a wooden cutout that you stick the remote in and then it sets on your table. It just like is resting there like a nice little display thing. And I've used that and it's basically never been a problem. I think the other thing that people hate is accidental scrubbing, but it doesn't confirm what you do until you click something. Right. And so if you press menu, it will take you back to your original position. And I think a lot of people just like don't know that, or I mean it's like definitely can be clunky, but I think it's one of those things. I'm fully convinced it's like if I had made a good video about it, people would figure it out or something like that. Like that was with iPad gestures, a lot of people really liked that video of mine because I was just like, here's how you do it, and it's like, okay, now I know. But when you don't know, it's like, what the heck's going on? So I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying it's a good design and that people shouldn't be confused, but
I'm not confused. I am perfectly full and conscious of mind, body, and heart. The problem with the Apple TV remote
just
is
anger.
It doesn't feel good in my hand. That's what I don't like about it. It's this dinky little thing that is, I have to do this to hold it. Or I guess I could pinch it between my fingers, and it's just not very...
I don't think I've ever thought about how I've held it. But yeah. I think the biggest thing is that you couldn't play any games with any other type of remote. And a lot of people are like, just use an old type. And it's like the touchpad has a lot of benefits that I think...
Buy games? What are... so? No, I kid. checking out this Apple TV remote stand. And, you know, I was really going to give you crap. Because I was, but I'm not, and here's why. $15 for this little block of wood that you could, you know, you pull out your Boy Scout pocket knife and carve out yourself. But I'm not going to give you crap because the suggestion that I had and the way that I keep my Apple TV remote from disappearing into the ether is the little... wrist strap that they sell. It sort of reminds me of how Nintendo had to send out those Wii wrist straps to keep people from flinging their remotes from the Wii into the television. But those are expensive as well. It has little claw. It looks like a lightning port. It goes into the lightning port on the Siri remote, and it locks in place instead of just being able to pull out easily.
Interesting.
And so you push the little prongs on the side, and then you can actually take it out. So that's been nice. I don't currently have a television in my bedroom because I read too much about sleep, and now I'm, you know, in a whole new world and mind state where there's never a need to have a television in the bedroom. But back when I did, I had the wrist strap on the one that was in the bedroom because that one could get lost a lot easier. And then the one that was in the living room was, it didn't need it. So, yeah,
I just like to imagine you wearing the wrist strap.
Oh, I did. And it's kind of nice to just, you do this. I don't think they really expect you. I'm saying you do this.
Oh, yeah. And
this is an audio podcast. I'm taking the strap, I'm putting it on my finger, and I'm spiraling it around in the air. And because of centrifugal force, with my physics degree there, I'm talking about centrifugal force, it will sort of stay in place. So, yeah. But my point is, even if you don't have a Sony television that has gotten the cook credentials, there is still a chance that you can do some of what you can do with HomeKit, not AirPlay 2, but with HomeKit by just using HDMI CEC. It's all about finding where the HDMI cords need to go and in what places.
Yeah.
And HDMI ARC, read up about that if my explanation got you curious to read more into it. But
I think the other things I'm curious about, I mean, you can, with HomeKit control, you can change inputs too. And I think what's weird is I haven't really seen good demos of this. So I'm curious, there's an article from Mac Stories that was Federico managed to get it on his TV through Homebridge, I believe, mm-hmm. or a fancy method. And also just for everyone, LG TVs also have newer ones have AirPlay 2 stuff. But the thing that I was thinking about is what AirPlay 2 in theory should be, where you can choose a TV show on your phone and then it plays on the TV, be browsing through an app and then click on a thing and then have it play on the TV and it switches sources where it starts playing on the TV even though you selected it from your phone, which is... It's a small difference, but it's kind of handoff now.
Handoff, throwing it to the television. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of thing. So I'm curious about that because that's kind of Chromecast, but in a way that what's always bad about AirPlay is if you close the app, it'll stop playing.
Yeah.
But I want it to continue on the TV. So that's the main thing I'm curious about. But for at least the input changing thing and for Sony TVs specifically, one day I was curious, I was how have I never thought to try to connect to this with shortcuts? Because most TVs are internet connected and they have an IP address and everything. And I basically Googled it and found Sony's support page for this type of thing and found out my IP address on my TV and then plug that into my shortcut and I can run it and change the different HDMI things with Siri also now because shortcuts... From my HomePod and everything.
You don't need no stinking AirPlay or HomeKit. You've got...
And I mean, I do. I have my my Hoobs just arrived in the mail. So Homebridge out of the box, maybe we'll be able to do that too for people who don't want to like tap into the IP address of your computer or your TV, especially if you leave it unplugged, like we were kind of mentioning.
Yeah.
Might be a great strategy.
Do as we say, not as we do kind of thing.
But I'm the one connecting to it. So I know that nothing is happening creepily or anything like that, which is cool.
At least in that way.
I just need to hide my password. I think you do have to get like a password and everything. So.
Oh.
Or it's like, I guess hackers could change the channel on your television.
Ooh, spooky. I hate it when they do that every single day. I just want to watch the Great British Bake Off. And it always changes to Dog TV. And I'm like, why are these hackers bugging me?
That's me. Because we're on the last season, so I'm scared about ending that show. Aww. Because it's so good. Also, for anybody who wants to see the Studio Neat thing, we can link in the show notes. But
we will.
I actually did a HomePod review where I took a bunch of photos. And there's a good one in the middle of the article from the Sweet Setup, where it's just like the Apple TV remote in the little stand next to my HomePod on the coffee table. And I am particularly proud of that photograph.
Okay, so that's what this is now. This is a little bit of look at my beautiful photograph. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, that's like the only photography article I think I've ever done.
Well, we're all very proud of you. That was sincere. It may not have sounded like it, but I meant it honestly. Let's move on to IKEA's, which, by the way, forgive me because I listened to a Swedish commercial about the brand IKEA, and in that commercial, the voiceover pronounced it as IKEA and not IKEA. And so in my head and sometimes out loud, I say IKEA. And you'll just have to deal with me. But IKEA has smart blinds, and we've been excited about these before. Basically, up to this point, if you wanted to have smart blinds in your home, you needed to refinance your home and get a double mortgage on your home and also sell a kidney. I think the only person I know, and this is probably wrong, but as far as I can tell, the only person I know who has smart blinds is a certain pal of ours from Canada named Renee Ritchie. And they're very, 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 very expensive. The ones
that homeowner have been, type of purchase.
Yes. It's like, it's kind of like, it's like a buying a printer, you get the ink, and then you realize I should just buy a printer instead of buying ink cartridges because they cost about the same, so why not get a new printer? It's like, let me find a house that already has smart blinds in it. The cost is sort of covered up by that versus getting an
just get a new house. Problem solved.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, just go out and get
a
new house.
That's our recommendations from Smart Tech today.
That is correct. It's the smartest recommendation we've ever given. Everyone should follow it. This is a home buyer's market. So cast aside your avocado toast and get some smart blinds in a brand new home. So IKEA's smart blinds were going to be the more cost-effective method of adding smart blinds to your home. I saw the prices were as little as about $35.
Where did you see that? Because I'm looking on their website now and it says 120.
Well, you're looking at a specific one. You got to go to the smallest size.
The future blackout roller. I think the blackout ones are the newest.
Well, see, now I've got to go find them.
Was that the gateway for the...
Let's see.
I like heard you say that earlier and I was like, oh, wow, cool. And then, yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
But I am saying the future ones, the new blackout roller blinds are like 24 inches is 129.
Oh. That's what I did wrong is that I was just looking at roller blinds, not smart roller blinds.
Yeah. So not as cheap.
Wait, so there are smart blinds that are different. They're not just the blackout ones, right? We can get them that aren't that are not.
Maybe that's
just
what's
blackout
new.
Ones. Anyway, the point is, they regardless of if they cost $300, they're less expensive than if you bought.
Yeah, they're not like $1,000.
Yeah, you end up spending, if you wanted to outfit your whole home, it would be about $5,000 to outfit your whole home with the smart blinds that we've talked about the last place.
Depends how many windows you have, too.
Yes. That's absolutely true. It costs more.
A lot in one room, but only in like a specific way. So I think like the main thing that I would be interested in is like my bedroom, because that's especially where I care that they open themselves or close themselves type thing. Like it would be nice for the entire house, but that is a bit of a purchase. But I mean, if they were all like, I don't know, $400 to get smart blinds. I mean, I guess we should get to the lead of this story is that they don't have HomeKit yet, like they promised they did.
Yeah,
so these just recently launched, and they do have Google Assistant support, but it doesn't actually support. Okay, now I'm seeing Amazon too, but
this is the bummer, is that we specifically, individually, are complaining about the fact that because we use HomeKit as our sort of system of choice, it is difficult to add these blinds to our homes because, and when we were kind of excited, hey, this is going to be the first situation where we will be able to have HomeKit supported blinds. Unfortunately, in this case, it's not going, it could be a while before we actually see that. But eventually we will see the blinds added to the other devices that IKEA has. Oh, see, I said IKEA that time, including their lighting and their speakers and other products that they have. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer, but we were just talking a little bit about Hoobs, which is HomeKit or HomeBridge rather, which is we talked about this last time
HomeKit
too.
HomeKit Bridge.
Yeah, exactly. It is a way for you to take products that are not currently supported by Apple's HomeKit system and add that support to them. And then you can connect these. And the blinds are going to be one of those that will be able to do this. But yes, if you use the Google Assistant as your smart home controller, these blinds are going to have that. And Amazon Echo devices, which have Alexa support, will eventually add, they'll be adding support for that as well. But according to a tweet from IKEA's Twitter account, that support will not be coming until 2020, which is soon if it's the beginning of the year, but we don't really know at what point in the year.
Early 2020 isn't like, I think generally in Apple parlance, that means like all the way until the end of March or something like that.
Early 2020, June? July? No, it should be hopefully sooner, and we're going to be keeping an eye on that for sure. I am a little bit bummed that I originally misread the pricing there, because I wanted
that would be much better if they were $30 each.
Yeah, I would definitely be getting those if they were $30 each.
I mean, I think it's, I'm not only personally invest, like I want it, but it, I think what's, it's just companies need to be held to task when they announce stuff like this and don't deliver on it. And especially if, when they put them on sale and say it'll come by the end of the year and then that type of thing. I think that stuff, it's like you need to wait until it's ready or not do it type of situation, because there's a lot of people who need to make choices off of this stuff. Like, I'm sure a lot of people originally bought Nest products because they were going to get HomeKit eventually, and that now will never happen. And so it is like hard to, like products like this are like hard to judge when they come out like this, because you could buy it and be like in anticipation of that coming, but it might never come. So that's what's, I mean, hopefully IKEA, is that,
it's
did
close.
I say it right?
Yeah.
Hopefully they will deliver, and a company like that probably will, but it is still like a little bit of buyer beware, because that's just like the reality of these situations, and especially when it comes from their own actions. Like there's articles from 2017 about them backtracking on HomeKit support for their lighting, their original lighting line thing. So it's like, I'll believe it when I see it, I guess.
Yeah. As
like I almost want to get the, and it does specifically work with HomeBridge, for anybody who's curious, but like I still almost don't want to buy it based off of that, because I want like real HomeKit support.
Right. As Bleak in the chat says, don't buy a thing unless it does what you need now. If you're trying to count on it in the future offering that, it may not ever offer that, which is a really good point.
That's kind of funny because in the HomePod review thing that I wrote, I was like, don't worry, it'll get better over time, which it has.
It has. In this case, it has. It's just if you can afford to make to take that risk. Boy, I love hitting this microphone. It's my favorite thing in the world. If you can afford to take that risk, then it is it's you know, can be worth it. But not everybody
go
can
into
really...
knowing that.
Yes, exactly. Go in knowing that. And that's a thing with early adopters. And I think that we're just now getting to the point where we're seeing less early adopters buying into the smart home. And so that's why it's important for us to really, like you said, put out those buyer beware things, because I don't feel as bad when I am, you know, encouraging an early adopter friend like Matthew to, you know, I'm sending him, oh, look at this. This is on sale. Oh, I have one of these. You should definitely get one of these. I don't feel as bad if that starts not working.
The Nano Leaf panels, maybe.
Okay, those are great. And everyone
those are
should
cool,
have those.
But those are very expensive.
They're so expensive, but they're the coolest thing ever. Anyway, and so with that, you know, I don't think that you would hold it against me as much, and I wouldn't feel as bad if there were some issues that you ran into along the way, because we're both going into it with the mindset of like, this is new technology. There are things that do go wrong and there could be issues there. But if I'm telling a family friend that this is what they need to get, I'm reluctant to get them onto the early adopter route of things. And so I often will, you know, maybe you shouldn't check this out, but this has had a long, steady history of reliability, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Okay. That pretty much sums it up.
Sweet. Let's move on to Amazon, which is being rude for not offering a product everywhere because everybody needs this. No, Amazon has, and I saw this, this kind of flew by and a little bit under the record or under the radar, is a battery powered Echo. But it's exclusive to India right now.
Yeah. Which is interesting.
Because I don't know, I still want a portable HomePod, and I would not mind having a portable Echo device because, do you know Ultimate Ears, their Boom line?
Yeah. I have one of those like flatter ones that are good for, I bring it to the beach.
Yes. I've got the Boom 3, which quite literally looks like a smaller version of the old school Echo Tower, and it is waterproof. It is great sound, and it is one of my favorite, probably one of my favorite like tech products that I own. And I just will carry that thing around with me in the house and not out and about. But yeah, if I went to the beach and got sand between my toes for whatever
reason. Oh my God, are you not a beach person?
I don't understand water, Matthew. Like, shower's fine, but we don't have gills. Why are we obsessed with water? I don't get it.
In California, which has like the best beaches also.
Well,
we're going to have a beach day.
You do your beach thing and be beachy and go in the water that makes no sense because we can't survive.
Three years from now, you're going to be like surfing out there
I can surf, maybe. But anyway, This UE Boom, I'm sure it would be great for the beach. I don't need it for the beach, but I do like to listen to music or podcasts or whatever in the shower. And so having it in the shower and knowing that I can put it on the floor or hang it or wherever, if I was bathing, if I was in a bath for some awful reason, cooking myself in my own broth, then
dropped
it. There you go.
You hate water. Wow.
Anyway, and I dropped it into the bath, then it would be fine. And that's what I like about it. When I'm cooking, I don't have any complaints there. So when I'm cooking or baking or something and I go to grab it with like flour on my hands, then it's also okay. I think it's a fantastic product. And so if it was an Echo device, that'd be super cool to be able to, you know, talk to Alexa wherever I needed to would be nice. And of course, if I could also talk to Siri as well, I think that'd be pretty cool. So I love this idea, this battery powered version. I think I would want it to be rechargeable. As the way to do it, but it's clear that these things can last long enough that and sip low enough power that they can be battery powered, and that's sort of the thing that's holding it back. So I'm kind of curious if this is just going to be a test device.
Yeah, I mean, they're the VP of Alexa devices. Oh, I said the word. That, can you imagine saying your title in that company and it's just like hello? Like
no, see, they have their voice programmed to where it's like specifically listens.
But Miriam Daniel, she's basically said portability has been one of the most requested features in India, and they want to have it carry with you from room to room in your house. So something just for you, which I thought is interesting, but it is like a way to break into the market. And also, like, if you don't want to have something sitting there plugging in electricity all the time, like, that's a big thing. And just also buy one instead of have an Echo Dot in every room or something like that.
That's a good point, too. See, I hadn't considered that one. That's a really handy thing there.
So you were, I think there definitely are Amazon's Assistant-enabled portable speakers besides that in the U.S., but they're not Amazon branded, and I guess maybe not as cheap, but like there's Bose ones, and the UE Mega Blast has control for it.
But
so
those ones never get the full power of the dock side of Alexa. There's always some feature that's not included.
That's fair.
Sometimes
it's
doesn't
like
have
just
proximity.
Music or something.
Yeah, it's
like,
just music, or it doesn't have the proximity sensor. Not proximity sensor, but it uses smart AI juju to make sure that it's the device that's closest to you that ends up responding to you, or depending on the context, it'll be the device that plays the best music that responds to you. And so I used to have this problem with the Ecobee thermostat. I ended up turning off Alexa that was built into it because it didn't have that proximity awareness. And so I would be talking to the tower in my living room, asking it to play music, and my hallway would start playing this tinny, horrible sounding music because it was out there listening to me as well and wasn't aware of the fact that I was closer to the speaker in my living room. So that's the problem. I don't want to get it from a third party because it's not going to get all the fun stuff. The Bezos brilliance that the actual... Thank you. I was looking at you to wait and see if you were going to... sort of give me that.
Is that funny?
Too.
I don't know.
I know. It was just, you know, if you're going to do Cook credentials, you have to do one for Bezos.
Okay, fair.
Thank you. Taking
so what's amazing is that Amazon's assistant has been around long enough where there's an entire product that's come and gone that's done exactly what we were talking about. I mean, it was the Amazon Tap. So I think the biggest thing was that you had to press the button. It wasn't
like an animal
all of the time. But it's a voice assistant that you have to use your hands for. So I feel like that it was doomed to fail, but it is just wild that, like, I think the HomePod is maybe, it's not even 2 years old yet. And there's been like entire categories that have been discontinued. So maybe that's the Bezos brilliance. Ooh, yeah. Burn.
Wow. Spicy.
I mean, we don't have to mention the Fire Phone, I guess, but
now that is a burn. Get it? It's fire. Thank you, Kevin, for the burning screen there. Again, I got to remind you should tune in live to hang out because Kevin throws in some funny bits in video form.
I will say, I guess, just for their benefit, is that I'm pretty sure that the Fire Phone is what taught them a lot of the lessons that they're continuing to relearn as they go, I guess, with multiple versions of products. But it is like now they're going all the way into, like, now that they own Ring, they're even going further and they have like a new Ring light that they're setting up.
Yes, and that is great, and we will talk about that, but I'm going to take break first.
Teaser.
Yes, you get a little nice little teaser taste before we come back from the break. So this is exciting. This episode of Smart Tech Today is actually brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean offers the simplest, most developer-friendly cloud platform. It's optimized to make managing and scaling apps easy with an intuitive API, multiple storage options, integrated firewalls, load balancers, and so much more. In fact, DigitalOcean is trusted by over 1 million developers. They make it simple to launch in the cloud and scale up as you grow. Whether you're running one virtual machine or 10,000, they've got you covered. You can spin up a virtual machine in just 60 seconds or less. Wow. plus standard, general purpose, or CPU optimized configurations that provide flexibility to build, test, and grow your application. DigitalOcean has over 2,000 open source tutorials to help you stay up to date on the latest open source software, languages, and frameworks. And you can modernize your cloud infrastructure fast with DigitalOcean's marketplace, which is a diverse catalog of over 100 pre-configured one-click apps. So that's where you don't have to go in and worry about, oh goodness, how exactly am I going to set this up? How it's a jumping off point if you want it to be, or it's a full situation there where you can go ahead and have it all pre-configured. It's just one simple click. That's CloudBees, Docker, GitLab, Node.js, which is the software behind Homebridge, which is something that we've talked about before on this show, Ruby on Rails, LAMP, and many, many more. DigitalOcean offers simple, predictable pricing. You always know what you'll pay per month with a flat, industry-leading pricing structure. And what's included at no additional cost is 24/7, 365 days, world-class support. You get monitoring and alerts. You get 99.99% uptime SLA. Team accounts, full DNS management, and 12 global data centers. DigitalOcean, it's on a mission to simplify cloud computing so developers and their teams can spend more time building software that changes the world. Go to do.co/twit today to sign up and receive a free $50 credit. That's do.co/twit for a free $50 credit. DigitalOcean, designed for developers, built for businesses. We thank DigitalOcean so much for their support of this show. We appreciate you, and so does Twit. All right, it's time to talk about ring bulbs, smart light bulbs. But before we do that, you know what? I've got to say, not too terribly long ago, there was an episode of a show called Tech News Weekly. Don't know if you've heard of it. A certain Jason Howell and Micah Sargent do this show. And we talked on the show about patent applications and how patent applications are kind of using patent applications to predict technology is junk journalism. I'm just doing a lot of alliteration tonight. And so I'm a little offended by the title that The Verge goes with here, the headline that The Verge goes with here for this article, because it just comes straight out and says, Amazon's Ring is making its first smart light bulb, FCC documents reveal. So, of course, like, you've got patent applications and those don't necessarily give information on what's going to end up actually being produced. But okay, hold on. When I first saw this story, as a story, I think it was on my Amazon Echo device. In fact, it was talking about patents. This is not a patent though. This is the, this is about the frequencies that they're wanting to use for the device. This is, like the power output versions, the Bluetooth support, which is a different document from a patent application.
So the FCC.
Yes. Yeah. Excuse me, The Verge. that is a boo-boo on my
part. I was going to say, I didn't know this was going to be so controversial, but.
I need to figure out, it might've been another site that we often go to for our smart tech news, which we will not say because now that it's a foot in my mouth, that I saw where they were talking about a patent application. So my bad, The Verge, you did fine. This is the FCC. And in this FCC document, this is a genuinely good way to sort of sniff out what a company might be working on, because basically before a company can bring a product to market in different locales, it has to first get approval, particularly if they are using a part of the frequency spectrum. And that is how we know that that is how we knew sort of before Apple announced when the Mac Pro was going to start going on sale, that that this was also going to be applied at the, or that they were going to put in the application for the FCC. So, yeah, these are great documents. And by the way, thanks, Chad. I'm seeing now they're like, no, this is FCC. Yes, which of course is a different situation than a patent. So in this case, the Amazon Ring smart light bulb will, in theory, be coming to market at some point in the future. The application was filed today. And today is, of course, Monday, December 9th for us when we're recording this. And it's showing the different frequencies, including Bluetooth, that will be used for these devices. So
it sounds like not this year, and there's no like pricing information or anything too. Somebody in a, where did that comment just go? But they were talking about it could be related to motion sensor lights, because I was trying to figure out how this fit in with the Ring brand versus just like Amazon's overall strategy.
There are two great things that you can do to make a well-designed bulb that adds to smart security devices. And our pals, my pals, because I love the products that they create at LifeX, they make a bulb that, along with providing the normal frequency of light or the normal light waves, they also put out IR light. And so by blasting out IR light, it will, when it's dark, those security cameras can still see things that are moving around in the room. So
does the light strip that I have do that?
I don't think so. I believe it's just their bulbs. I haven't checked if the strip does it, I'll be honest, but I have, there's specific bulbs that they actually include some IR infrared light that will blast out. It's essentially what the Nest camera has around the outside of it. It's what many cameras that offer night vision support are doing. They just have little bulbs putting out IR light. And so I can see Ring combining a motion detection light bulb that also puts out IR light that then also is a regular smart bulb. That's the only thing in my mind that makes sense to put it under the Ring branding, because Ring is the company that that sells fear, as we've come to find out. Or sells via fear. That is once again
or a potentially throwback to Tech security, but
yeah, you
that
know,
is one
security. But why do you need security? Well, because you're afraid.
I mean, or I just don't want my packages and also, stolen, which have happened to me. And not in an afraid way, but as a peace of mind. But also, I agree. It's like, generally, you take that same thing. It all depends on the tone of the music and the commercial you're taking.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
In the arms of the angels. I could also see them making floodlights, for sure. That's another. That was kind of my grandparents' way of casting aside their fear and sort of feeling more comfortable. Is like, well, we have floodlights outside, so if anything creepy happens, then
that is a nice, like,
it'll be lit up.
You don't have to film people. You can just turn on the light if there's someone nearby and that type of thing. So
you don't have to film people. You just blast them with a 6,000 lumen LED bulb and some IR lighting.
They're like, oh, my skin looks great.
Yeah, so that's what Amazon is working on. And again, The Verge, you did a fine job, folks. The FCC,
no patents here,
and yeah,
but it'll be interesting to see like if Amazon takes Ring further, because they don't make their own specific smart lights. Or do they know? I was going to say maybe they just released something, but they've got those plugs now. So they are moving into other territories that Hue is also, because that's something that still hasn't come out. Actually, slight detour is that the Hue smart plug is like almost out, because I got a notification that it was like available and then it went away. And I saw reviews out like 2 weeks ago. So there are more beyond, like, I think Wemo generally is the, like, accepted one of the easier like smart plugs to use right now. Yeah. I have like three of those at least, or maybe four now. I think I just ordered another one on Black Friday, but
they're okay. No, they
yeah.
They're,
I was gonna say you. Of course, you have thoughts.
Well, they are the most accepted, and every time I hear someone say, "Oh yeah, I've got Waymo plugs," I get it. They
yeah. It's the least bad, maybe.
It's just that it came from a company that has done wireless for a long time, and they, because they'd done wireless for a long time, and because they had relationships in place with department stores and hardware stores and things like that, then it yep. was the most consumer-facing smart plug available, the quickest. But while it's fine and does fine and is fine, I happen
glowing
to,
review.
Yeah, I happen to think it's just a lot. I just got a lot of salt this evening.
I can just feel. Yeah, I can feel the
happening?
Opinion. Yeah,
yeah. I need some water for all this sodium. I am a hypertonic solution. Anyway, I'm an ophthalmologist. I told
Professor
you,
Professor Micah over here again. All your fanciness.
Yeah. So with that. iDevices, I still hold, makes the best smart switch because smart plug, although they call it the smart switch. That's the one confusing thing.
Oh,
about
yeah.
It.
I have one of those also. Now that I mean, it honestly, I do get confused when they're not like all Hue stuff because I almost have exclusively Hue. So I'm like, oh, yeah, those other apps. I think the shape of the iDevices one, isn't it like
why
wider?
Are you using
or something?
Other apps? Why are you using other apps to control it when you've got the Home app and HomeKit support?
I don't. Are you making fun of me? I'm a little confused.
I'm not
confused,
making fun
but...
of you at all. I'm very. You said you forget you have those other apps. You don't have to use the apps because you have HomeKit.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm just saying. Like, I forgot that there were not.
Oh,
it wasn't all just Wemo.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Because you're using. Okay. Okay. Now
I think
I'm not
the like theirs is huge though. I think that's why I didn't buy more of those. I mean, in general, all of them are
huge?
Too big or. I think I, you know what it is I don't like the nightlight, and it's caused issues in the past where, cause it thinks it's a light that I want to control ever, but I don't care. I don't need a nightlight on my switch because the point of the switch is for it to control a different light that is somewhere else. Usually, I don't know. It's I'm clearly offending you again, but
I'm
don't,
not offended.
I just don't personally care.
Right,
and
right.
So it's like all of these need to get smaller, I think. So that's what I'm hoping the Hue one does.
I see.
And,
well,
and Amazon has their, like, now they'll, like, throw five of them at you or something like that anytime you buy anything now.
Yeah, that's true.
They're, like, really pushing the smart plugs over Black Friday for sure.
I have thoughts about why I think it's the best. The one thing that I'll say is that most smart plugs end up being wall warts. So it's already sticking out from your wall a certain distance, like about 2 inches. And then you have to plug a plug into it. And so then you've got 2 more inches sticking out from the wall. The iDevices design, smart, puts the plug on the side instead of on the front. Yeah. So it only sticks out that first 2 inches. The rest of it's covered. And then I really like to have that nightlight option, not only because it works as a nightlight that's great in a hallway or something like that, or even just as some very light mood lighting, but because it can be used as an indicator light. So if you can think about tying that to shortcuts, to where in shortcuts, you do, think about this. In shortcuts, you set it up to where it's going to, you check the daily forecast, and if it's going to rain tomorrow, then set that light to
Don't
blue.
Do this to me, Micah.
So then you wake up in the morning, you see that the light's blue, you know there's going to be rain, you get your umbrella before you leave for the day. Or red, oh my goodness, the volcano down the street is going to explode today, says the seismic activity police, SAP, because earthquakes and volcanoes are closely related. The volcanologist police
you never know.
are going to say that it's going to explode. You get the point, though. Like, there are automations to be done there. There's a great nightlight. Anyway, that's why I think that one's great. But it's honestly mostly for the design, first and foremost, that the plug is on the side is so smart to me.
Well, I didn't think about either of those, so
it's okay.
Dang it.
It's
anybody okay. Want to buy my Wemo switch?
Well, and that's the thing, is that iDevices is constantly sold out of those plugs because people are buying them up. I just got an email not too long ago that said grab them before they're gone, and then in parentheses it said again. And so they sell out of them like hotcakes, and I'm curious if they'll ever
start
iterate
a black
on the design
market.
There should be. Okay, we need to move on. We'll talk a little bit about the Google Assistant, but then we need to move on to our projects and our picks of the week. So the Google Assistant is going to add even more support. This is the thing. We have talked about this in the past, the sort of three big assistants, Amazon's Assistant, Alexa, the Google Assistant, and Siri. When it comes to smart home and smart device support, they all are trying to keep on track with one another. And for the most part, they do. Apple sometimes lags behind based on the fact that they don't always, they don't make it incredibly easy, but they do. They have made it a lot easier to offer HomeKit support. But Amazon in the beginning especially was pushing hard to make sure we will do whatever we can to be as easy for you to add support as possible. And I think that Google has started to do this even more than it originally did. I can remember when I was first getting into smart home stuff and opening up the Google device that I had and going, wait, what can I do in the Home app? I can only control this Google Home I have sitting on my counter. I can't make any adjustments to anything else. And now it has added support for many things, including new appliances, which is just kind of fun, right?
Yeah, like blender, cooktop, dehydrator, fryer, grill, multi-cooker, pet feeder, pressure cooker, sous vide, stand mixer, and yogurt maker. And I just was looking through their developer documentation, there are 59 different types of products that Google Assistant now works for, which is, it's cool. I mean, I feel like we kind of talked about this in an earlier show, and I see some of this snark literally in the article that we're referencing. We're not entirely sure of the usefulness of the Google Assistant stand mixer. It's like, sure, I don't need a Nest mixer, but like, if these products are going to be smart, it's great that the assistants will work with them and be able to, like, I don't personally know how to make yogurt, so maybe it makes it a little bit easier.
Hey, Boo Boo, make me some blueberry yogurt would be really nice.
I mean, I think you still have to get involved a little bit, but stuff like pet feeder or like, I mean, they even say smart beds, drawers, and closets. So I don't even know if these products exist. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if these products exist and they're just supporting it so that it can exist type of thing. So maybe I should do more. I like smart beds is, I don't know, I guess if you have one that like folds down from the wall or something, that would be amazing.
Well, I know, so CES is but, definitely known those moonshot sort of devices. But the smart beds that these devices have supported before often have to do with tracking your sleep and things like that. So, hey, Boo Boo, how did I sleep?
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Hey, Boo Boo, how did I sleep last
night? I'm literally thinking a bed that like folds itself.
Hey, Boo Boo, my sleep number is 42. Yeah, that would be kind of fun.
I mean, that probably is one already, I would hope.
If it's not, it should be.
But that is a good point. I signed up to go to CES. I'm not sure if I'll get accepted because I don't know if I'm enough of an influencer with my YouTube channel.
Did you put your name literally down as Maddie C, or did you put your name down as Matthew Cassinelli?
Dang it, I should have. They would have taken it then.
Immediately.
But like some YouTuber almost like got them. Their standards were literally like, you have to have 1 million followers. And a bunch of people were like, okay, that's like very high bar on Twitter. And then like 50,000 on Instagram, which is like totally different. And then they completely switched it. So I might go to CES as a media person. Hopefully that would be awesome.
Well, fingers crossed
there. Get some firsthand experience. This is going to be embarrassing if I don't get it now that I think about it.
Oh no, you've told everyone. Well, if you do go, you'll hang out. You can hang out with Leo and Ant while you're there.
That would be awesome.
And you'll probably by the second day be wanting to spend all of your time on that smart bed. Snoozing away. Because you will be out of energy. I love this. Google Assistant, it can now follow your dietary restrictions whenever it recommends recipes. So I can say, hey, Boo Boo, I am gluten intolerant. And then, you know, 2 days from then, hey, Boo Boo, I want to make dinner. What should I make? And it will keep that in mind that I do have a gluten intolerance whenever it's suggesting some recipes for me to try. When we're already talking about these smart monitors or smart screens that we have in our kitchens that are helping us make meals, the smart assistant should know our dietary restrictions. There are apps that can do that. And I love the idea of, it knowing, you know, I can say, hey, my birthday is this time. My dog's birthday is this day. Here's the allergy that I have. It starts to, my favorite color is this. And all of those things, it can sort of tie those together and probably sell them to some data broker. But more importantly, it can then provide information, or maybe it like pops up a background that has green in it because it knows green's my favorite color. There's so many
implications.
A green dog that is eating gluten-free kibble.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Just take it a little
just to the whole way. Born on December 19th somehow as well. So with all of that in mind, I love the idea of having an assistant that, like a real assistant, if you hired one, sort of knows your preferences and the things that you like.
It's a good point, especially. I mean, the thing that this is my personal request as somebody who lives with a vegetarian but isn't vegetarian myself, there's no concept of like that existing. Somebody who like vegetarian friendly or like something that you could make that could be vegetarian or not. Like that's the type of thing that if they had a filter like that, I would be amazed because that would, that's what I need the most is, I don't know. It's like, it's all or nothing, but I think usually there's like, I don't want to say mixed households. That's the only way I can think of it. It's just like, not everybody is necessarily gluten-free, but I mean, this is just like default. You should have this.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, if your personal assistant got this wrong, you'd be like, all right, I'm going to get a new assistant.
you've got to go. And then, you know what? I think we'll kick that last one. Basically, this is us kicking it to you. A quick little thing is that the Google Assistant can give you holiday updates from the North Pole. But I would prefer that it do all sorts of holiday things, because there are lots of different holidays that are celebrated. And so just Santa's updates on where his sleigh is, you know, one of many beliefs that we have around the holiday season. So ho, 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 and happy times. let's go ahead and move on. This is a fascinating subject that Matthew, you kind of were talking to me about as you are figuring out your setup for Maddie C's YouTube channel and how your smart lighting plays into that. So what's going on there?
I have been struggling with color balance or white balance and like the color ambience. I'm mixing up all the terms, but basically like what color temperature my lights are and how it affects my ability to film, both in just completely having the wrong type of lights, having bot lights that on camera flicker a lot, and then also just like the hue ambience ones don't behave the same way as the rest of the lights, and so that's also bothering me. But basically I was realizing in general white balance is one of those things that most people don't think about with video, and on smartphones is mostly handled for you also, which is great. But it's basically the thing where like in the daylight, the light is much whiter. At night, you usually have like yellowish lights in your house so that it's not just like blindingly bright at all times, which the two video lights I use for this podcast are very white and bright. So I am always like completely alert and not falling asleep or anything if once it gets dark here now, because it is much darker. I didn't realize that when we started this podcast, it'd be dark by the end of every episode. But
it's a bummer.
So basically white balance is also one of those things that when you start photography, I think a lot of people, if you don't get it right, your photos look good, but something about them is just kind of wrong. And basically what it means is that no matter the color temperature, if your camera is set the right way, a white should look white and stuff like won't have like a yellowish tinge or anything like that. But basically I had it all wrong. I had hue lights in the lamp up above me, which also has like a tan cast to it, just from the glass that it's shining through. And then I think I had both of my lights at different color temperatures just because I didn't think about it and didn't set it right. And so that was, I basically had those three casting different color temperature lights plus whatever like weather it happened to be coming in through the windows a little bit, because I don't always close all of my windows. But basically I recognized that this was happening and changed my, and then I started to like go in and figure out, okay, can I set my lights along with the hue lights? And I think hue is also color temperature is all measured in Kelvin, which is,
yes,
I guess you're the professor here, so you could teach me, but
I love 5000K lighting, even though you talk a lot about how you like in your living room, you like it to be a little bit warmer, which is 2700K to 3000 at the most. And you don't like to have overhead lights in your living room space. I want to be blasted with 5000K light everywhere because I like it. If I've got lights on, I want to see everything. So I'm a little bit different.
Even at night?
Yeah. But that's if I want to see everything. If I don't, then I have just my lamps on. But I'm talking like at night, if I was, cleaning the house, or if I was reading a book, even I don't know. I just don't like it dark until it's time to go to bed, and then it's pitch black. Anyway, so yes, there are different color temperatures along the spectrum, but 5000K is usually that bright, bright white. And if you get a 5000K classical incandescent bulb, it usually has a blue tint to the outside of it.
Yeah.
And that is to help provide that color of white.
Well, that's what's wild is the hue white ones are 2200 Kelvin.
Okay, so that's like the normal white.
Yeah, the soft white. But in your brain, soft white is white, not very dramatically yellow. It's like they are basically yellow lights. Yes. And the two I did buy fairly cheap lights, but I guess I should have looked into this more with like professional photography lighting. I think generally you just don't ever go that low. Like mine go, I think 2,700 to 56,000 or
5,600,000.
Yeah. Where like they were, I think they were both set. I think one was around 56 and then another one was like somewhere in the 40s. And then I guess since I didn't know you had such specific preferences, but I set it all to 4,700 and then in my camera also set the same thing. And then I realized I had to take out the overhead lights. And I did, I happened to have one hue ambience in the lamp that is in my office. And then I randomly had another one in another light that I didn't, for some reason, we just like never really use the color stuff. So I brought those up into my office, put those in the overhead thing. And then now I can have all the same color temperature lights going except for the lamp that I have. And then I was like, sweet, now let me move on to my hue play lights and turn those on. And anything besides like a full color where it's like, if it's completely blue, it works. But if it's mixing in the white, it flickers extremely bad on video.
Oh, man.
And these are like the two lights that are right behind me meant I bought them to light up the walls behind me for video. And I was like, I guess somehow I hadn't rent like every time we do Smart Tech Today, maybe like the webcam that I use doesn't have this, but it's like my shutter speed. And I have a video camera that has a specific, it like shoots in shutter degrees, not shutter speed, the same way that most people do with photography. So it's a whole video thing, but I basically don't think I can use these lights in my office anymore. And like, I don't really know how to do this setup otherwise. You were telling me to like reach out to somebody on Twitter or from CNET who basically specializes in testing this for smart lights. Cause
yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even realize this was a problem.
Yeah. And there are different, because LED lights work a little bit different from incandescent, which works a little bit different from halogen, and the way that they go about producing the color and the way that they go about producing certain lumen levels and all that kind of thing. It's all very different. And so that's why at dimmer brightness levels, you will often get more flicker than you would get at brighter brightness levels. And yeah. So there's a lot that goes into it. And Rycrest.
That's only with the color type. I think that's why it threw me off, was because Hue soft whites don't have this problem at all. You can just dim them any level that it needs to be, but it's when it's mixing in the yellow plus white or other colored LEDs is that like combination tends to like make it flicker on video.
Right. And so that's, I mean, that's an unfortunate thing specifically for video. And so I just, for those folks out there who are, you know, considering replacing their bulbs and you want to do LED lights or you want to do this, it just depends, you know, what setup you have, and to pay attention to quality in those situations, because that can make all the difference. Cree bulbs are CREE bulbs are some of the best LED light bulbs available, because Cree does a good job of trying to make sure that it does color reproduction accurately, and gives you actually what they're saying in terms of color temperature and things like that. So it's a little bit complicated, and I'm curious to see as you hear back from Rycrest, as maybe you speak to some other folks, what they're doing, how they get good video and lighting, and how the camera settings can make a difference there. But we're going to go ahead and move on to our picks of the week now. And I think I will start out this time. My pick of the week is a simple one. And in fact, it is made by a company that Matthew has mentioned before. And that is Waymo or Wemo.
This is another one I'm saying wrong.
I don't know that you are. I think we, it could
it's
be
probably Waymo. That sounds less Americanized than
Waymo.
My version.
So these, you know, the plugs, a lot of folks know the plugs, a lot of folks have the plugs, and they're fine plugs, as I said. but what I want to talk about is their in-wall light switches, and in particular, the three-way light switches that they offer. So in your home, you might have for example, in my home, my home is three levels. The garage is on the bottom floor. You come in through the garage or through the front door, and you go up the stairs. There's just like a little spot down at the bottom, but you go up the stairs. That's where the living room is, the dining room is, the kitchen is. And then you go up another flight of stairs. That's where the bedrooms and the bathrooms are. So with three floors, that means two sets of stairs. And in those two sets of stairs, at the bottom of the stairs is a light switch, and at the top of the stairs is a light switch. And both of those light switches control one set of lighting. They can turn on and off the lighting. Now, if I were to take a normal smart switch, so not the one that I'm about to talk about, not the Wemo one, but another smart switch, and put it in the wall, it would not provide the support, the right kind of switching required for this three-way lighting situation, because instead what would happen is it may turn on the lights, but then when I went up to the other switch and turned that one on or off, it could cut the power to the smart switch. It could cause all sorts of issues, and that's because there's a wire called a traveler wire that essentially communicates between the two. It provides a return. It provides the whole circuit and lets both of them do the communication. And so again, the issue with most smart switches, in-wall smart switches, is that they don't have a support for the traveler wire. And so if you want to be able to have, and this is the great thing, you don't have to replace both of the switches with Waymo's smart switches. You only have to replace one of them. You can keep the other one as a normal switch, and it will still work in that circuit. So
the light can be off, and you can still use the smart stuff.
And I can still use smart stuff.
That's amazing.
To turn it on or off. It doesn't matter what the other one's doing, but the other one I can also use to turn it on and off, and it works just fine. Very cool. Very, very, very cool. So there was a two-pack that was available.
A three-way two-pack.
Yes. Thank you. Available for, I think I got it even for less. It might've been during Black Friday. I think I got it for $60, but it's available now for $85. And that's still a pretty good price. Under $100 for two light switches, smart light switches made by a reputable company with support for all of the assistants, Alexa, the Google Assistant, and Siri offer support for all of those. And, if you've got, in my case, two sets of stairs, which I do, I've got both of those covered now. So it will provide the support that I need for those two spots. So with one purchase, I've taken care of those two stairways and lights between, making them smart, which is very handy. The package comes with everything that you need to know to make your smart switches work. So it shows you how to set it up as a three-way in a three-way outlet.
So you're using like two separate three-way outlets with this, not just like top and bottom. Because it's kind of, I guess it's kind of pointless to use the second.
Yeah. Okay. So one is for the first staircase, and then the other one I'm using for the second staircase. And even if I choose to use the regular light switches at the top of each staircase, then I can, and everyone else can too. Or they can just hit the button on this. These are not dimmable, but they can all. I can also use, you know, my phone or my voice or whatever you have. So really, really cool. And I want to go ahead and say, Waymo. They're also made. They can be used in a single normal circuit as well. It doesn't have to be a three-way circuit. If you just want to get a two-pack of these, and you want to use them for, different spots in your home. Waymo just basically got smart about, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to offer it as a three-way circuit if you want it, but you don't have to use it. And so you're getting it, and then it just opens it up to be used in more places throughout your home. So very smart of the company. These look fantastic. The actual physical hardware of them is fantastic. They do also make a dimmer switch option. So if you do want to have it in a dimmer switch situation, you can. I will say this.
Can't you just do that the smart way, though?
No.
Can't you? Oh, it still would just be on or off.
Well, it depends on what your bulbs are. You know, if I used Hue bulbs with this, which I wouldn't do because the bulbs are smart on their own. So these are just, this is the thing is that in your home, you need to know what lighting situation you have, because in my old home in Springfield, Missouri, I had some dimmer switches, and I bought LED bulbs that were specifically dimmable. And they did not, even the ones that were made specifically dimmable, they never provided the functionality quite that I wanted. They went basically from off to on in no time, and it wasn't quite a good dimming situation. So I sort of, I wasn't willing to switch to incandescent and use all that extra energy just for having dimmable bulbs. So
yeah.
I decided
those buzz anyways.
Yes,
like that's always
annoying.
That's like
loud.
Real buzzing, not just flickering or something.
Absolutely. And so it just wasn't worth it to me. And pretty much anywhere where I wanted it to be dimmable, I just used a Hue bulb instead and kept this switch dumb. But in the places where I wanted to use a smart switch, in-wall smart switch, I went with the non-dimming options. It's just on and off, and that's how I like it. And in my apartment, they have LED lights pretty much throughout. There were some places where they were using normal bulbs and I replaced those with LED lights, but the lighting is actually, if you take off the sort of covering over the top of it, like the glass or the whatever it is, they have LED strips inside is how the whole fixture is made. So with this, on and off is what I want. I don't want to think about dimming or anything like that. It's just on and off, which is fine.
If you did get dimming, you'd have to have dimmable bulbs.
Yes.
Also,
exactly.
I think my brain is like, how doesn't, I think I've just been so steeped in Hue that I clearly didn't even notice my own problems that I would be running into, like the color temperature stuff.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, with the hue, yeah, if the bulb is smart and can dim, then it's fine. But if you're doing it via the switch, it's having to do that by modulating the power that's going to it. And so that causes a whole different, that's where the concern comes up. The LED light needs to be dimmable itself. And if it's hue, then you just control the light bulb. You don't need to do that from the outlet. So yeah.
I feel like the in-wall stuff does seem like good solutions that are also just not available to most people who are in apartments.
Yes.
And so I think it is an interesting, there's kind of like smart home for homeowners and smart home for apartment people. And there is, I'm slightly in between.
You are a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah. I don't know if they're three-way, but ours literally has like large buttons that I'm pretty sure are like tripping wires in the background or something like that. So
it's just breaker boxes. Something that in it's your
like
house.
I'm not going to touch. I need like a seasoned professional because did I ever figure? I think this house is over 100 years old, not just like 60 years old.
That's,
so
it's almost as old as me.
I don't know what to say.
Okay, good. Good. That's how we like to keep it. Keep them guessing,
folks. You
look
great for 100.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I am a vampire.
My pick to just continue my devotion to Hue is their new Hue button, which is a nice little, I have it here. I haven't actually set it up yet, but I've been waiting for it because it's basically, I feel like it's a Logitech Pop, but not and supported by Hue. But the thing that I'm most curious about is going to be just like carrying it around as like a little smart home button.
Oh my goodness, also, you're going to get it surgically attached to your hand, aren't you?
No, actually, I think just right on my forehead and then just run my shortcuts like that. So I will be reporting back as a future project on how this goes. But
that's
it
fantastic.
Is now newly available. But not their smart plug.
I've been curious about it. I've wondered, how small is it? Can you tell us that, or you haven't even opened the box?
I haven't even opened. It looks like it's in the middle of the, like a light switch size buttons, or like almost like the size of the switch on a light panel. I don't know how these words clearly, but
yes, grape.
It's getting late. I'm.
Are they grape sized?
I think so. Something like that. A little bit flatter, maybe a little bit
folks,
wider.
He's not going to open the box for us.
I got to do a whole unboxing video.
Oh,
I've been like,
okay.
Yeah,
see.
Exactly. I've got my overhead rig ready for tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see. Please report back on whether it's grape sized. And so how much are we looking at for cost of the Hue button?
Let me look it up. Probably shouldn't have. I was going to say, I think I just, there's some stuff that I've just been immediately buying and then later regret.
Excuse me, only $20?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, nice. Then that's a reasonable, it's not like 60. I'm pretty sure the Logitech Pop thing was like,
this is the size of one of those mini Reese's cups or Reese's cups. that is what this is the size of. Not the normal big one, but the little mini ones that you get like around Halloween and stuff. That is the size.
You know what? I feel like it's very comparable to the Flick ones, which I think I should double check this for next time. But I think I saw that their HomeKit support was delayed also, which is
those have been around forever. And the fact that they don't offer it tells me that they never will.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I wonder if there's some sort of, if like multiple brands are pushing back. I wonder if we just like walked ourselves back into like a Apple conspiracy that they'll do a event related to HomeKit in the spring that would make sense 2 years after the HomePod.
This
is complete conjecture.
The HomePod, which is a new device from Apple, it is shaped like a cod fish and is a music speaker. The HomePod was.
Did I say that? Or
no,
did you?
No, you didn't. Okay. I was about to.
I was like, what?
No. You said HomePod. And then I said, well, the HomePod instead of the HomePod. The HomePod was marketed by Apple as the best way to listen to Apple music. It was never marketed first and foremost as a smart device, a smart home control thing. So I don't know. Would they do a follow-up to the HomePod?
Like something like a mini one that doesn't cost $300 seems like it would be.
Oh,
people would want to buy one. it's just like, I don't know. I think it being that expensive means it's not really realistic to have more than maybe two or three, depending on how well off you are or something like that. But when they're smaller, and just like with the, you can get like 15 Echo Dots around your house for like the price of one
HomePod.
For
$15, so. Yeah. Practically.
Yeah, exactly. They sell them in a 15-pack now.
Can you imagine? Just an egg carton and you open it up and it's Echoes. It you know, be a
they actually carton, sell Fire tablets in like a 6-pack. It's like
what do you,
ridiculous. What? I mean, I think it's for like schools or like the whole family or something, but it's...
Okay, so I'm Oprah. You get a Fire tablet and you get a Fire tablet and you get a new car. Right.
I feel like they're due for a... I mean, honestly, I would love if they talked about shortcuts in a in an event like that, too. That, all that would be, like, I'm wishing this into existence now.
I hope so. I hope it happens. But, folks, we've come to the end of another episode of Smart Tech Today. We thank you so much for tuning in both live and afterward, subscribing to the show, joining us. It is because of you that we've got new sponsors and that the show keeps a rolling along. So we thank you. And also, you know, if there's somebody out there in your world who's asking about Echoes or wants to know about wearables or the future of voice computing or anything smart, wicked smart, then tell them about Smart Tech Today. You, of course, can tune in live. We record the show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's 4 p.m. Pacific, which is 2300 UTC. All you have to do is head over to twit.tv/live or head to twitch.tv, twitch.tv/twit, and you can hang out with us there. But, of course, subscribing means that you don't have to hang out with us live if you don't want to. You'll get the show right when it's published. All you do is head to twit.tv/STT. That stands for Smart Tech Today. And that will point you to all the different links for all the ways you can subscribe to our show. If you have questions, feedback, or anything in between, you can email us at stt@twit.tv. Matthew Casanelli, where can people go to follow your work, to see you unbox that mini Reese's-sized Hue button and everything in between?
YouTube.com/Matthew Casanelli. And yes, I will be having that. And I tease, oh yeah, Matt Casanelli on Twitter. But I have some smart tech products that I will be demonstrating. And I also have, I was mentioning this to Micah in the live stream before the show, I have about 200 shortcuts saved to my home screen now, and so I'm making a video all about that because I am a mad person. I'm drunk with power.
Drunk with shortcuts power. we need to make now. See, I'm in the habit of inspiring cocktails for different shows. There should probably be some sort of shortcuts cocktail. so you can truly be drunk with shortcuts power. If you are looking to follow me online for some reason, you can find me at Micah Sargent on most of the social platforms, or check out the shows I do right here on Twit, along with iOS Today. There is Tech News Weekly. I should have said along with Smart Tech Today. There's Tech News Weekly. There's iOS Today. Hands-on Tech and Triangulation are some of the other shows that I appear on as well. So
all the good shows.
All the good shows. thank you so much again for being out there and listening to our show and subscribing. And now, Matthew, it's time to say goodnight to all your smart assistants.
Oh, say goodnight.